Welcome, welcome, welcome to Nodes in the Net, a weekly tangential irreverent conversation that caters to the interests of liminal trickster mystics like you. And like Matthew Crowley, who is the novelist who was today's Nodes in the Net guest. Matthew wrote the books Vice Bound and Capital Vice, with a third in the trilogy coming out soon. And they are a wonderful read that I definitely think you should check out. We talk about it a little bit in the episode, but they're that kind of like urban fantasy vibe that you might be familiar with if you've read the Dresden Files or enjoy Buffy the Vampire Slayer or something like that. They're a good time. Like any good podcast episode with a published author, we didn't focus exclusively on the books, though. We had a wonderful conversation about recognizing the divine in others, kind of, you know, rubbing the sleep out of our eyes and waking up to the better world that our hearts know is possible. We talked about just a wide range of really interesting woo topics, and I really enjoyed this conversation. I thought it was perhaps one of the ones that went by the most quickly of any Nodes episode I've ever recorded. It was sincerely a joy to talk to Matthew, and I know that you'll enjoy listening to it. So we're going to get to it. Of course, you can find links to buy Matthew's books and check out his online presence at creekmasons.substack.com. And yeah, speaking of, why don't we read a little bit, as is our tradition, read a little bit of the most recent blog entry from creekmasons.substack.com. This is from an essay I'm kind of proud of called Toothless Cogs. And I'm going to read you just a snippet from the middle. And if you want to read the whole thing, head to the Creek Mason Substack. Can I know and love my cowardice as the helpful orientation that makes me a toothless cog? So how can we exist in the murder machine but still subvert it? How can we be householder activists? Perhaps by becoming householder bodhisattvas. What better way to renounce privilege than by sitting quietly in a corner engaged in radical rest? Before becoming awakened, after all, the Buddha was a prince who tasted every kind of luxury and material pleasure available. He's basically the ultimate renouncer of worldly privilege. In the essay Radical Rest, fellow Creek Mason Nintizen makes the case that through resting on the meditation cushion, we consume less. A good thing, given how helpfully we prop up harmful systems when we contribute to Hollywood's or surveillance capitalism's bottom lines. Plus, when the instincts bred into you by being society's default are to stomp around and try to make yourself team captain when you've only known about the sport for about 15 seconds, maybe it's best to bench yourself. But perhaps even more than that, there is something about stillness and space that has an opportunity to truly disrupt the murder machine. The practice of a toothless cog is to grind down our teeth. Teeth are triggering emotions, the feelings in our body to which we feel averse, which make us want to act rashly, to yell or thrash or provoke shame or create drama and fear. Essentially, these are the emotions that addicts attempt to soothe with alcohol, chocolate, or their phone. These are the emotions that keep us functioning unhappily but effectively in a system that has learned myriad strategies to harness them for everything from advertiser money to the regurgitated talking points of divisive politics to the unfathomable tragedy of ongoing genocide here and abroad. These emotions arise and we react mindlessly, often in service of the murder machine because that's how it's designed. If you've ever watched Century of Self or even Mad Men, you know our culture is built on rich men selling us stories about how to soothe these uncomfortable emotions. They use propaganda to make a quote-unquote need, then advertising to get us to fill it with a product. That's how we participate, reactively. All right, there's a lot more to that essay, and I do hope that you'll check it out and let me know what you think in the comments there or by joining the Discord and, you know, hitting me up. Ping me directly. I would love to see you online. That's it for now. Let's get to this episode with Matthew Crowley. Hello, Matt.
Hi.
Hello, Matthew Crowley. What an awesome pen name that is, first of all.
Thank you so much. I am really proud of it.
Yeah, I've never seen the spelling of Matthew like this, I-E-U at the end.
Yeah, I kind of stumbled upon that, actually.
Is it some specific culture that spells it that way? No,
I kind of just found it interesting.
Yeah.
Awesome. I guess it was one of the names. You've played Pokemon before?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I would name my character Matthew always, and that then carried into my pen name.
Yeah, that's my username kind of has a similar origin story. It's like my old gamer handle.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because my name normally is just spelled the normal, not normal, but M-A-T-T-A-T-W.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you're doing the smart thing by picking a pen name too.
Yeah.
Like I sometimes lose a little bit of sleep worrying that my day job is going to like find out about my podcast. Not that I like ever talk about anything that would be like dangerous for them to know about, but like, I don't know. I feel like I could maybe get discriminated against a little bit for being so woo.
I know what you mean. Like, I don't often talk about woo things with people who aren't already woo. But I have been saying a few things recently to people, and it becomes much more well received than I thought it would be. But at the same time, I've never really talked about it with people at work. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been floating these like test balloons. Like, I feel like maybe we like isolated ourselves and got like really deep into like online communities and book rabbit holes and YouTube, you know, time warps, and then I don't know, like maybe that was a feature of the pandemic, like the social distancing. We all kind of like turned inward and explored, you know, the weird realms there. And now it's like I kind of want to connect with the meat space people again a little bit.
Me too.
Which maybe is like a good segue to the tarot card we drew. We got the Nine of Swords.
Okay.
Do you know this card? Do you know tarot?
I have a tarot deck. I find it helpful. I don't use it that often. So I'm actually looking at my deck so I can like reference what it is.
Yeah. It's on the Creek Mason Discord too, if you have a window open with Discord. Okay. But so like this is it's kind of a troubling looking card. It's nine swords kind of like hanging on a dark wall in the background, extending off the edge of the card, and a person in bed in the foreground with their head in their hands. You know, they've got like a blanket on with all the astrological symbols.
Yeah, I've gotten this card many times.
Have you?
Yeah.
it's the card of like anxiety and self-doubt and like worries about the future, and the sense that I get, because the swords are the suit in the tarot that represents like emotion, or I'm sorry, not emotions, like the intellect, thinking, thoughts, you know, the analytical, you know, slicing of the knot of Damocles, the sense that I get from this person who's like got all these swords, you know, weighed down on top of her, is that she's just overthinking things.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought it was a she. That's the character has short hair. I guess it could go either way or anyway, but,
well, looking at this, it does seem like it's all in her or in their head in a way, but in that the battles are over, maybe. She's wearing white, this color of purification. The swords are on a black background, which could be darkness of the mind, sort of a mental space. It's almost like the end of a karma line or like an incarnational line, because she's got all of her blanket, what she's covered in, her body is covered in, is the astrological signs, as if she's gone through all of the different signs, either through time or like in different incarnations.
Mm.
And it looks like she's got flowers all over in between, which is like, coming to mind, it's like the blooming of the lotus flower. Reality is ever, ever unfolding.
Wow.
And on her bed, it looks, I don't know what that like engraving is, but it kind of looks like that painting of like God touching Adam, you know?
Oh, yeah. It totally does.
Yeah. And like, and that is, I know that God is seen as a brain in that picture, which is another mental image, like the brain touching the body, giving intellectualism to the animals.
Yeah. What a great interpretation. Can you say more about the end of a karmic timeline? Or yeah, is that?
Oh, yeah, sure. So, I mean, like, I'm kind of in the belief that everyone has already been everyone else, you know?
Yeah. Or will be.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of a simultaneous thing. I think that everyone is in their own karma line or like their own incarnation line, but at the same time, they've already been everywhere else in everyone's karma line, kind of like in Indra's net, but like purely for humanity, you know?
So, yeah.
Yeah. I think that really at the end of it all, to exit the karma line is just to wake up and be like, this is it. Like, this is it. Or just to realize, just to remember that we really are all one and all God at the same time. And it really is just as easy as waking up. And it seems almost like this person is awake. Like, they're moving out from the beginning. So if that Michelangelo, I don't know if it's Michelangelo, but the painting is underneath their back. And now they're sitting up on their legs, almost as if they're ready to leave. But their hands are covering their face as if they're not ready to wake up, or as if they're rubbing the sleep out of their eyes, or in sort of a hypnagogic state, which is when you wake up, and sometimes, like, this happens to me all the time. I will have a dream about being in school, and it's the last, it's the final exam for a class that I did not even know that I was enrolled in, but I find out that like it's the final exam, and I need to go and ace the test, and I'm taking the test, and of course it doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But then I'll realize, oh wait, this is just a dream. And then I often have a choice where I can say, okay, well, I know this is a dream, so I can either choose to ace this test, or I can just wake up, because why am I even sitting here right now?
Yeah.
And then even when I wake up, though, I still have to spend a few minutes like, oh God, now I have to go through the fallout of failing my exam. But then I'm like, oh wait, no, that never happened at all. So we can just go on with our lives.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a nexus point in between. Like, and I did not really, I kind of was a little nebulous with this explanation. But I think there is kind of a nexus point in between, like, recognizing our awakeness, our sleepness, the fact that we are all God, but also we are all a bunch of different people and everything at once.
Do you think, the terminus point for all of our, you know, I like this theory too. It reminds me of The Egg by Andy Weir.
Yes, I love that.
Yeah. The kind of like infinite reincarnation thing, and then eventually like you wake up and you escape samsara, or you realize we're all God or whatever. Do you think that the like terminus is the historical Buddha or you know, because like the Buddha, it's the awakened one, and it's possible that I'm a past life of the Buddha. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's very possible. I think it's, I mean, first of all, like 100% that's true, I would say. But yeah. It's also, I think there are also many different truths within that. Like, I think many things are possible. Like, I think you and I are the end of a karmic line for people. But I think we're also the beginning of karmic lines for people at the same time. I think it really all exists at once.
Yeah. And that's something that's hard to wrap your mind around. The idea that, mm-hmm. like, the soul that incarnates as us is sort of outside of time. But it at the same time, it's sort of intuitive that the dimension in which soul kind of like plans our incarnations and, you know, like Ram Dass was always saying, like creates the checklist of experiences that we need to have in a given life in order to burn off karma or whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you subscribe to that stuff too?
I mean, yes and no. In my personal experience, I guess I've seen my own timelines kind of fall away, and I've seen myself move into new timelines. And this kind of makes me believe that I don't even think our souls are living our lives front to back, you know? Like, yeah. I think sometimes people do, but I also think that our souls are like coming in for a little bit, maybe living a few seconds or a few months or however long, dipping right. out, being someone else, being many other people, being us at the same time. And like being us at the same time, I think it's not as rigid as we like to think it is.
Yeah. Like you're in your incarnation for a lifetime and then you're in another incarnation for a lifetime. That's not the experience of it if you pay attention.
Yeah. I think if you pay very, very close attention, like even too much attention, it's all kind of just like maybe like a fuzzy blanket that if you pull at it too much, little bits of fuzz and feathers like are flying all over the place.
Yeah.
But it's all fine. Like at the end of the day, it's all really fine. I know that's very hard to say and understand, but it is it's all completely fine at the end.
Yeah.
And even in the beginning. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And in the middle.
Yes. of course.
If there is beginnings, middles, and ends at all in this like sort of timeless thing.
I know.
And it's hard to say that right now with like horrors going on in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the very real possibility. I heard we exceeded 1.5 degrees Celsius and all the scientists were saying that was like a turning point. And now methane's being released and, you know, I think the number of people who are hungry in the world doubled in the last year.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to look at all that and like, you know, the bigotry and the racism and the, you know, all of that and be like, yeah, it's all fine.
Oh, I know. Yeah. Absolutely.
But it is. It's all perfect because it's all God, because what else could it be? And also, we each have a responsibility or a calling, I think, to heal the world in some way. You know, like white blood cells distributed across a body that, you know, each need to fight a different infection from a different wound. Right? Like there is something that it's all perfect. And also in a paradoxical way, there's a lot of improvement that we could make.
Yeah. Well, like, let's say, I mean, if you're traveling somewhere and you're taking the path perfectly, even if like, if you're still 30 minutes away, you're doing perfectly, but you're not there yet. You know what I mean? Like there's still a long way to go, but it's still like you're still on the path.
Yeah, I think Martin Luther King said, or maybe it was Gandhi, you don't need to see the whole staircase. You just need to take the step in front of you.
That's true. That's very true. And yeah, like from the Tao Te Ching, the journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step. And I do think that if 2020 showed us anything, it's that we can it's all about like just being comfortable in paradox. Not all about, but I think there's a lot to be said about being comfortable in paradox. And I think sitting through 2020 was like a massive collective experience of just sitting in like fear. And like people were really sure we were not going to make it through that. But then at the same time, making it through that, because all we could do was sit through that, really. So it was kind of a little on the nose in that point. But sitting through paradox and then coming out on the other side and just being comfortable with that, looking into it if you want to, like I love being analytical, but also you don't have to look into it. Like you can just do what you got to do. And
yeah. I mean, what you do, I mean, like, I think we met through the alien community, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Awakening OD. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I really love about Jessa is that there's this like this recognition that like, yes, we're part of a community that's sort of awakened the Matrix, and we're doing like self work and we're burning off karma and you know, whatever else. We're kind of like recognizing that this is all a video game, it's all an illusion, it's all, you know, perfect, right? And that's great. And it feels good to be a part of that community. And also the people in our lives, you know, our coworkers or parents or whoever who aren't part of this community, they're also doing what they need to do in soul school. They're having the experiences that they signed up for in order to mature the super organism that incarnates as all of us simultaneously, you know, like, there's no like badge of honor here. There's no like diploma that you can hand out. That's like, it says, these are the good people and these are the asleep people. These are the sheeple or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think.
No, I know what you mean. I don't think, I think any degree of separation is detrimental to recognizing yourself as one, which is why I don't like to, like, I look at everyone as myself. I look at everything as myself, like to an extreme degree. If someone is doing something I don't like, I say, well, I'm doing that right now. Like,
right.
Literally. And if someone's doing something I like, I say, well, I am doing that right now. And if I ever say, well, I would never do that, or I would do that, I kind of just take a step, meditate on the spot and just clear myself and be like, well,
that's wonderful.
We're all doing everything. So
yeah. What a service.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's a lot, but it's just how I feel comfortable.
Oh, it's a beautiful thing that you're providing the world, you know, interacting with someone who's doing that has got to have completely different ripples on,
mm-hmm.
on the moment than, you know, do you notice that? Do people?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I notice things like, I just notice how events kind of, they could be linear. Like there are programmed paths that we all go down, and there are programmed paths. I can see where my programming would take me in a situation a lot of the time. And then sometimes I can see it if I like take a step back and just recognize what's really going on. I can just see it like loosen up and like expand, and then less happens, but also it's better. Like it might be less eventful, but it's more comfortable.
Less happens, but it's more comfortable.
Yeah. Like it's almost like being in a video game and skipping over the scripted event where like something jumps through the window. I'm like, let's just not do that. But then of course, now you're just sitting in a room and no one's doing anything because the scripted event hasn't happened yet. And although in a video game, I mean, like, who wants to see their characters lounge around and, like, read books and take walks and, like, eat food? But in my life, I love doing that. So I'd rather do that than watch someone jump through the window at me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we really are blessed with, like, such a deep range of experience. Like, even no matter what this is, I know it's a game that God plays, but it is, like, the best game. it's so great. Because, like, I mean, everything is so rich with experience. Even just sitting around and, like, literally just staring at your wall. I mean, there's endless things to do to, like, experience when you're just staring at your wall. It's actually crazy. You can...
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, the Tao Te Ching, I'll quote this maybe a lot.
Nice.
Says that the master or sage can see the entire world without leaving her bedroom or something, like, which is true. I mean, you can, I know Indra's net again, the holographic universe in that one part of a hologram, the entire hologram is contained. And I don't really know that much about that, but
yeah,
you can stare at, I was in this, like, an artist group also on Discord that kind of split off. But I did a practice where I spent a few days just staring at a rock because I was under the belief, which I still believe is true, that you can learn everything you need to know if you're looking deeply enough by staring at a single object for a prolonged period of time. Because everything really is in everything else. Like the entire ocean is contained within a drop of water, which is really cool to know. And I think this is also kind of summed up. I don't know if you read Carl Jung at all. I liked his Red Book a lot.
Nice.
Yeah. He has a foundation called the Philemon Foundation, which there's not too much information on Philemon that I know of. But basically, Philemon was a Greek myth. Him and his wife were just an old couple living their lives in a small hut. And Zeus and Hermes came to them. Hermes, who's like the trickster god, like Hermes Trismegistus, I believe. And Zeus, like the leader of the gods. So kind of very like symbolic there that they chose those two people or those two gods. But they came to them in human form, and Philemon and his wife, who I forget her name, but I should know. They just gave them hospitality and just treated them like good people. Mm-hmm. And then Zeus and Hermes gave them like just blessings to the end of their lives. And then when they died, they became two trees next to each other that were entwined together.
Ah.
Yeah. But I think that myth is really powerful for understanding or like contemplating that myth or living through that myth is very powerful in understanding that we are all God and all one. It's just treating everyone like they could be Zeus or Hermes or a god, which they are.
Right.
There's also Christian beliefs of treat everyone as if they're an angel in disguise, even if it's very difficult. And then in a darker story from the Bible, there's Sodom and Gomorrah, like Lot and his wife, who did not suffer a very good fate. But those two cities were, according to the Bible, very sinful. And then two angels appeared and did not receive hospitality from anyone except for Lot. And, I mean, he didn't really handle that situation very well, but he was saved regardless because he treated that, like, divinity with hospitality.
Yeah.
Which I think the Philemon story is better because it's not just hospitality. It's also like humans being divine at the same time. So.
Yeah. Seeing divine in the other.
Yes. Which is one of the hardest things we can do, especially now that we have access to seeing so many people doing so many horrible things.
Yeah. I can like, you know, we're coming, it's an election year, And there's a lot of people having a lot of trouble seeing divine in the other right now.
Mm-hmm. Especially, with the two-party system, it just is inherently divisive.
Yeah.
I mean, both parties are just set up to be, well, if you do this, then I'll do the other.
Right.
So I don't really understand politics because it's too alien to me. Because it's just like everyone's pitted against each other, and that's just the antithesis of my philosophy.
Yeah. I love, you keep bringing up nodes, or I was going to say nodes in the net, because that's where the podcast gets its name, is from Indra's Net.
Yeah, and I can see that in your like wallpaper, or your like icon.
Yeah, that was a wonderful little piece of art that was done for the podcast by someone on the DTFH server, and I really love it. I'm really he did a lot of the art for my early blog entries and then kind of disappeared from Discord. But I miss contracting with like real artists. Mm-hmm. it's so easy to just fall back on ChatGPT, you know. And just like create the AI art for my blog articles now.
I was lucky enough to actually grow up knowing an artist who's very good. And he did the work for my two novels that are posted online.
Yes.
Or on Amazon. Yeah. Vice Bound and Capital Vice. So right. He did both of them. And I love the way they came out.
They're so cool.
Yeah, thank you.
Like, that's a book you can judge by the cover, because the cover is badass.
Thank you. Yeah. So there's actually, there's two covers now. There was an older version, which is like a splash. Do you have that one, or do you have the newer one?
I have the newer one, because I think the newer one is part of the trilogy, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So I wanted the full experience. When does the third book come out?
I'm not sure yet. I'm writing something else in the interim because I've just spent so much time in this writing this like series that I needed a break.
Yeah, and I feel you.
Yeah,
I have like one novel that I'm it's like in a drawer, mm-hmm. sitting around.
Yeah.
And even just like the 50,000 words of that book, I'm like so over it.
So much. Even
the idea of like editing it feels like, I mean, I've done some obviously, mm-hmm. but like, I don't know. What do I want to say about that? I don't want to make it about, my novel. I think it's just so cool that like so many people in our like broader community have a novel in them, there's mm-hmm. the maybe they've like storyboarded some of it or written a chapter or, I mean, other people have other hobbies too, that like they've made a post on Instagram of their knitting or whatever,
Yeah.
Or they've like started their chaos garden or the hiking blogging project or whatever. Mm-hmm. But you're fucking doing it, man. You've got like these great books out there and I'm glad that we're talking about like your spiritual beliefs, because I think that really like comes through.
Oh, they go hand in hand.
Yeah, it's very much a part of that universe that you've mm-hmm. created.
Yeah. Yeah, even like from the very basis of like the world, like the origin of that world is very woo, very like oneness.
Yeah.
I don't know if I should talk about it in here if people haven't read it, but
yeah, well, don't do spoilers. Maybe I think I think it's probably best not to like give away too much. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like the sort of the setup of it, the like what you're gonna get in like the preface or the first chapter or whatever is like, I think a good place to ground us if you want to go into that.
Sure. So the main character, Casey Benton. basically he is kind of obsessed with a social media influencer
who,
so he is gay. He is like this like jock like kind of guy who very different from Casey, who's more like reserved, kind of like, I don't know. In the beginning, he's not very like out there, but he does want to be a musician online and is taking a few steps to do that. But he's also terrified of people like learning about his work, which is kind of goes back to like being Woo in the beginning. Like we were like wanting to put yourself out there.
Yeah.
But also fearing what people would say.
Right.
But then once you do, I mean, like people are generally well receptive, so no fear there.
Right.
But then his other friend who is chronically online, which I think a lot of us have experienced being, shows him a thread that he thinks is a hoax. Which is like, there's lots of information online. Who knows what's true, or like misinformation online, who knows what's true or not.
Right.
And in this thread, there is an ancient incantation. And if it's read out loud, then whoever reads it is now in a binding contract with the goddess Zephisestra, who will grant your wish, your deepest desire, but you have to sacrifice a human being before the sun sets. So Casey unwittingly reads it. Partially unwittingly, partially he's a little influenced by Zephisestra. And then he basically has to, well, he doesn't really believe it at first, but is basically bound to Zephisestra and would need to kill someone by the end of the day.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Which is a lot. But I also like that he wasn't really sure in the beginning, like, because so much of the stuff we hear online is, even if it seems true or seems untrue, there's still like a grain of salt we have to take everything with.
Right. Yeah. I love that. It's almost reminiscent of like those chain letters that you would get in the early days of the internet, like send this to 5 people or we'll burn your whole family.
Exactly. I know. And that was like an inspiration, because things were so scary online back then. They still are, but like back then, oh my God, they were. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how old you are, but I think that like the millennial generation really benefited from experiencing the internet at an age when everything was scary.
Yeah.
Because it created a little bit more caution and like cynicism, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit less, I guess maybe skepticism is the word. Whereas I definitely see people out there who, you know, because something is in print, they're going to believe it no matter what, you know?
Yeah.
Like, oh, it must have been vetted by someone, you know, that's the way the newspaper works. But the blog is like Freedom Warrior AR15.com or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Oh, totally. And I think actually we're in a bit of a transition period right now, because in the beginning, it was like you weren't supposed to believe anything online. You were supposed to believe the things in print. But now the people who thought that are now believing the things online.
Right.
Like, as if it was the same thing from their past.
Yeah.
So it's like the funniest thing I've heard about that was like, as a kid, don't like... what is it? It's like, don't meet strangers and don't go in a stranger's car. But today it's like summon a stranger from online and get into their car, like with Uber and everything.
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's
like literally
that. Yeah.
But
I would be kind of like spooked, I think, if my Uber driver showed up in like a white van.
Oh, I would just get in. I wouldn't even care.
I probably would too. But yeah. I think it would be like that moment of like, oh, I wasn't supposed to be doing this.
It's like, you know? Yes, it was really like all the, like a lot of that messaging is completely reversed now.
Yeah.
But people who grew up with it, I think, are more skeptical than the people that are now accepting it as full truth, which is why there can be, and I don't really want to get like political, but, and I won't, but I will say that, like, I mean, like, some news sites will just take like a single tweet that has like five favorites and be like, this is emblematic of everything, which is just not true.
Right.
Which is why even when I'm online, I just use the internet for entertainment. Even if I look up things that are true or not true, I just take it with a grain of salt. And if I hear it from multiple different points of view, I'll be more likely to believe it.
But,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's media literacy. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Sorry for keep like making it political or whatever. I don't even know where you land on the spectrum. Like, mm-hmm. I would certainly want to be welcoming to even the people who read Freedom Warrior AR-15 or whatever, you know? Yeah. Like, I think that there's space at the table for all of us because we are all the divine in the other. You know, I could have made a similar joke about, like, I don't know, MAGAisthedevil.com, you know? It's all the same.
Yeah,
I don't know why I got like politics on the brain right now for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of messaging about it right now, so it makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just steer clear of it.
But this character from your novel, I think, like, makes the mistake. It's kind of funny, like, you create this situation where, like, this exact skepticism that we're talking about that, like, maybe keeps us safe from taking things online too seriously is, like, his downfall.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Because he does engage with it. He, like, fully engages with the incantation. He reads it out loud. And then now he's bound to the goddess. So to continue, which I guess this isn't really a huge spoiler, although it all unfolds kind of as it goes, but as he leaves work that day, he then is fully not planning on killing anyone, of course. Which, if anything online tells you to kill people, you should just not do that. I'll just say
that.
Regardless of anything. But he does... As the sun is setting, he chances upon someone who is about to commit suicide on a bridge.
Yeah.
And then he has a short conversation with this person who is
Wait.
Oh.
I don't want to give away what happens to the person who's, I think that's like the perfect place to tease it. Like, he's come to the bridge and he's like kind of not really taking the thing seriously, but on the other hand, it's like stuck in his head a little bit, and you know, he's maybe got this like outside influence of the goddess, and he finds this guy who's like the perfect convenient target for, like, well, he was kind of going to do it anyway, so, you know, whatever. Yeah. But, like, whether he makes the decision to, you know, help get this guy off the bridge, I think is, like, the perfect place for us to tease it. I think that creates the mystery that people will want to read.
No, I agree. Because I wrestle with that sometimes. Like, do I talk about what happens after that when it's like, you know, but a big part of me just wants people to just experience it knowing as little as possible. Because then it's like a real trip. Like, if you don't know anything other than what we've said, and then you go into it, like, so much happens that just, like, I think it keeps unfolding in a way that is just, like, really, I think there are some fun twists and turns. Like, it keeps evolving, literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a ride.
I'm really glad you liked it.
I'm glad to have had it put in front of me. I would love to hear what the Creek Masons think about it. The other thing we've mentioned that the main character is like, driven by this desire to become a professional content creator, a professional musician. Mm-hmm. It's a tricky thing for me, is how I want to put it. There's, a blog for the Creek Masons, and, it gets like a certain number of views per article or whatever. In this podcast, of course, like, I can't help myself but look at how many people have listened to each episode, and I get like maybe a little caught up in that. And part of me just wants this to be like my hobby. I get to talk to amazing people, and I get to, like, the Creek Mason Discord community is like a home for me. It's a source of support when a lot of my meet space connections have kind of fizzled, especially because of the pandemic, but also just because there's been a diaspora away from the area that I live, and a lot of the people that I grew up with are no longer here. And I have no idea, especially now that I'm sober, how to make friends with people in real life. Like, how does a 35-year-old meet other people? It sort of seems like everyone's either busy with their new children or like living a life of wanton debauchery that I like can't relate to. And so it's really hard, but the Creek Masons, I've got this like wonderful community that like uplifts me and provides a social safety net almost for like those moments when I'm like feeling terribly alone and outside of belonging, alienated.
At the beginning of our talk, we talked about talking about woo stuff to meet space people and having them like accept it more easily. I think a large part of that comes from just engaging with this stuff on our own, like privately in these online communities. So energetically, like, I don't know if you know the I Ching, it's like a Chinese divination.
I've heard of it. I know Jung was really into it, but it's not something that I've studied myself yet.
Okay.
I probably will at some point. And I love that you're quoting the Tao Te Ching too. That's like,
Hand in hand. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Those are my two go-tos. Yeah.
But I love it.
I do. Yeah. I have the Carl Jung like forwarded version of the I Ching, but anyway, so a lot of the I Ching readings I get say, change yourself and the world change, like the ripples of yourself will change the world. And I think that that's true for everyone, first of all. And I think engaging with these online communities where we can speak about things that we wouldn't otherwise be able to talk about, create ripples around us that then open that up in the meet space. So if you're going to talk about woo stuff online, then in your actual vicinity, that opens up, even if it takes a long time. And one of the reasons I wrote my novels is because I really wanted gay characters in novels. Even if I didn't even know if anyone would read them. And some people have. I don't actually know the reception. I haven't checked the numbers yet because I haven't done my taxes.
Do your taxes.
I will. There is time. I do my taxes, if anyone's listening.
Yeah, the IRS, I think, is like 50%.
Big no to the Net fans. Yeah. I think that just like putting it out there, even if it's, because it's, I mean, regardless of the actual numbers, it hasn't been life-changing yet. regardless of that, I'm still going forward and doing that because it is like, I see it opening up things around me where I am gaining new experiences in like the gay community, even if it's been kind of slow so far. There have been some very powerful experiences that I've had recently. More and more as as I publish more and more and as I stick with it, as I keep writing, even in my own time and without sharing anything, writing about gay characters opens up more and more in my life. And whether or not like the books start selling really well, which I hope they do, I'm still just going to keep doing it because I know that it really does change like actual aspects of my life synchronistically.
Yeah.
And I think that that's true for anyone doing anything. Anything authentically.
Right.
Really changes your life for the better.
Have you ever heard about Grant Morrison using his comic books as like a sigil to manifest things in his real life?
No, but that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It was like he like manifested his wife this way or something, or wow, a woman he dated. He like just created her as a character in his comic book. And then eventually like he met the person, you know, it was like, he really met the character.
That is awesome. I think
that's like a really cool, like reality warping thing that the art is capable of doing.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like actual superhero stuff.
Yeah.
That's like an X-Men character.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what comic did he write?
I think it's called The Invisibles.
Okay.
But he's responsible for a lot of stuff. Grant Morrison. He's a cool guy. You for sure would enjoy him. He's into I think like chaos magic is a good way to put it.
Okay.
So actually the premise of your novel kind of reminds me of something that he does all the time, which is like he will invoke Hermes Trismegistus, mm-hmm, into his body in order to like harness the trickstery creativity force. Okay. and like write, you know, from that place of being, I guess you could say, like possessed by, mm-hmm, the egregore that is Hermes, you know?
Yeah. I'm looking him up. He did Batman and he did X-Men.
Yeah, he did.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, first of all, that is amazing. I don't typically like channel things into myself.
It's scary.
Yeah. I once put Amun-Ra in my dog for a few days. To help me quit caffeine.
How did that go?
It worked.
Did it?
So, I guess, yeah. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't know if I should be doing that.
Yeah.
But
yeah, hopefully the dog consented, you know?
Yeah, she did. I mean, she's one of the coolest dogs ever.
Aw.
Yeah.
We love our dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really channel, but because I kind of just go for like the all God. Like I just go for the one. I don't really choose. Because yeah. I guess any deity is just like a personality facet of the all God. Yeah. So there's really nothing wrong with choosing just like a specialty or like a point of interest. But I do just go for like the one.
Yeah.
Which maybe is too much to chew, but who knows?
Yeah. Do you, have you read The Kabbalion?
Yeah, I finished it up last year.
Nice. Yes. I've read it a couple times now. And it's not really considered like actual hermeticism by like sort of the like raised eyebrow set of the internet occult community, mm-hmm, that I've been exposed to, at least. Like it's considered like new age philosophy with hermetic clothing.
Yeah.
But I think there actually is some synergy with hermetic principles And I mean, what is the new age except for, I think I said this on the last podcast too, but like, what is the new age except for a synthesis of a bunch of different sources? Like even in this conversation, we've brought in like Buddhism and Taoism and, you know, this concept of like the all God, is really compelling to me.
Yeah.
The idea that like, the universe is God. And so is that kind of how you use it?
Yeah. I mean, really my only belief that never changes is that everything is God, like literally everything. And yeah. I think any system within that, as long as it's based on that singular principle, can work. I think anything can really work through the lens of just everything is God. But you just have to really believe it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, wow. Like, there's so many different traditions, religious traditions, that have a lot to say about just... I mean, you can dig up any... You can pull those principles from any religion, I think. It's really just recognizing that that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's there's a book that I've been meaning to read for a while called Perennial Philosophy. I think it's by Aldous Huxley.
Okay.
That kind of like finds the common threads in all of these things.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yeah. It's in one of my favorite novels, Name of the Wind. One of the characters is trying to reconstruct like these historical legendary people from all of the myths that are about them.
Mm-hmm. And, is Patrick Rothfuss?
Yeah.
Okay, wait,
yeah.
Don't tell me too much. I mean, tell me what you need to tell me, but I do have this on my shelf and I'm...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've heard from multiple people that it's like one of the greatest books
ever.
Yeah.
You've heard it from me now too. It is amazing.
I was on a plane and someone told the person behind me about it. I was like, wow, yeah, that sounds true.
Yeah. Just be prepared that it's highly likely that we'll never get a conclusion to the series.
I heard about that too, yeah.
Yeah, like just, you know, if you're okay with like the sort of fantasy blue balls, like...
Yeah, I mean, I just started Berserk, that, and the author of that died 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Mm. Game of Thrones or Song of Ice and Fire is one of my favorite series.
Yep.
Book wise. And I don't know about that ever receiving an ending, hopefully. But
no,
who knows.
It's, I mean, like, just if I was George R. R. Martin, out of spite, I wouldn't release an ending. Just the way the fan base treats him is just like deplorable.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, as a, like, just from a human being to human being, he just should just do whatever makes him happy. As a fan of the work, I want it, obviously, but
obviously,
but I mean, like, whatever he chooses to do with his life is up to him.
Well, the nodes in the, or I keep doing that, the Name of the Wind story that I was going to tell is like in the first couple chapters.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah,
so he's trying to reconstruct the historical figure from the myths that have sprung up, and he says that, like, you know, when you have two children and they both have blue eyes, you can, or two cousins, you know, who both have blue eyes, you can bet that a grandparent somewhere along the line also had blue eyes. And, you know, you can trace the evolution of things that way. But chasing this myth, it's like one of the kids has one eye and one of the kids has seven eyes, but they like blink in and out of existence. And one of the kids has like two eyes, but they're constantly changing color. And so it's like really hard to figure out like what the, you know, commonality is that like relates all of these myths to each other. Mm-hmm. And I like to use that as an example of like what perennial philosophy means to me, because like if you look at all of the world's religions, like all of them have like I don't know, they at least all have eyes, right?
Yeah.
You know, in this metaphor. And so there is something that you can maybe say like traces back to our African origins or something like that, you know, or mm-hmm. very early humans that maybe had like a primal religion. And I love to flirt with the idea. This is what like perennial philosophy is about. I love to flirt with the idea that like primal religion is the one that was like intuited through the like supreme mindfulness of hunter-gatherers who mm-hmm. had no distractions and no civilization tearing them away from their like fundamental goodness and basic, you know, nature. And I just love the idea that like there's a religion that was like the ultimate ancestor of everything that we have now. And if we just kind of like study everything, we can maybe put together that like, I guess it would kind of be the Tao, you know, it would be the, mm-hmm. the thing that it like, we've come up with all these specialized details of its various aspects, but there's like an eternal Tao that I guess probably cannot be told. Ultimately, it can only be experienced in like a non-referential space.
Yeah. So
without definition.
Yeah. So like, I've been asking to look into African mythology. I have not been allowed to do that yet. I don't know why, but it's coming. There's Buddhism says like, yeah, the Buddha is everything and all things. Hinduism says that there's Brahman or Brahma, who's
right.
We are all Brahma. A lot of those Taoism says like we're all the uncarved block, like the Tao. There's not even a name for it. I was raised in Catholicism, like Christian, and my biggest problem with Christianity is nothing that Jesus said. First of all, it's just
yeah, he seemed like a cool dude.
Oh yeah, well, it's just that we're taught that that's God. And you're not him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, and I think it's the impersonal God, maybe. I admit that. I don't know if that's the actual definition. But yeah, I mean, it's like, you're here and God's somewhere else. Like, you're not him.
Yeah.
This creation.
Well, check this out.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt, but like, I think that maybe Christianity, like Nietzsche says, is kind of a slave religion. Mm-hmm. And it has developed over the years in order to exert dominance more and more. But if you look at like the Bible itself, I think that there's a case to be made that the story of Jesus is meant to be instructive of like what we all are.
Oh, yeah.
We're all the Trinity, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think that like, that thing that you said that you were doing early on in this podcast where you recognize the cut scene that's about to play out
mm-hmm.
and you just decide to skip it.
Yeah.
I think the thing that decides to skip it is the Christ itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's like, it's the thing that decides against creating more karma or more ripples into the future that are
mm-hmm.
Potentially harmful or uncomfortable, you know?
Yeah. Like there, cause at the end of the gospel, everything is coming to a head. There's like riots. People are grabbing Jesus. And then he's like, he takes the ultimate step back. He dies, goes into a tomb for 3 days. And then just comes back and hangs out with his boys, pretty much.
Cracks open a gold one.
Yeah. I mean, like, that is kind of symbolic of that. He really did just, like, surrender to the moment. That's not really what I mean. He kind of did just like take a step back, and I don't think we all need to die, but if we're going to switch timelines, it's not just it's not just what is it? It's not just not seeing the cutscene. It's like loading a different save file. Even it's like you kind of have the timeline has to die off for you to get to the new timeline, and that's why one of Jesus' quotes is, "If you try to save your life, you'll lose it. If you try to, but those who lose it for like my sake or like for God's sake will gain it." So if you're on this trajectory of pain and suffering, karma, if you try to hold on to that, you're going to like lose your life in that, you're going to have a bad time. But if you let that die off, which is kind of like, well, that's going to be my life, but I'm going to let it go. You'll then be reborn into a new timeline, which can happen a second later and look exactly the same. But just like that guy just won't burst through the window at you.
Yeah. Wow, what a wonderful way to put it.
Thank you.
I love that.
Yeah. And I mean, one of the biggest things, I think Jesus can be applied to like this, these woo topics, in that he, if you read the gospel carefully, he did not really even do the miracles. The other people, like people had to have faith for it to happen. Like they did, like they did it themselves, in a way.
Placebo.
Yeah. Cause he was like, he went to his hometown and people did not believe that he was who he was because they knew who he was as a kid. They knew his parents. They're like, you're human. You're not God. So he did not do many things there, but, there was a woman who touched his cloak. He didn't even really know that she did it, but she believed that she would be healed even if she could just like get close to him and touch him. So she really healed herself, because Jesus was saying the whole time, you are God's. He even says that in the I think in the Bible, he literally says, the scriptures say you are God's.
Yeah.
And I was going to say something else, but I forget what it was.
Well, I mean, so let's, we've been going about an hour. Do you have like a couple more minutes?
Sure. Yeah, I got time.
Nice. I think this is like a really natural place for us to kind of, steer gently toward closing.
Okay.
I want to bring the Nine of Swords back into it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I really love about your interpretation of this card is that, like, it's, to me, when I see this, I think of, like, you know, the anxious perseveration or the shameful, you know, self recrimination that happens in the middle of the night where you're, like, really hating yourself and, like, feeling anxiety. And his head in his hands to me is like a gesture of like woe and despair. But what you said was it's the end of the karmic line. He's gone through all of these incarnations in the, you know, the different astrological elements are all there, you know, kind of covering him. You know, like keeping at least his bottom half warm. I guess he's a he now. I've changed genders. and then you said something that really stuck with me and that I'll probably bring with me on future tarot readings, you know, when this card comes up.
Awesome.
Is that, you know, maybe he's rubbing the sleep out of his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't someone who is having trouble sleeping, but someone who's just woken up.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I love that. And I wonder, is there a way that we can use that that concept of like having just woken up to kind of like tie a bow on it? You know what I mean? Does anything arise for you from that?
Yes, actually. So if you look at the bed, it's pink, but there's a white splotch where he was laying.
Mm.
I mean, according to chakras, red is the lowest chakra. It's like earth.
Yeah,
white,
the root.
I often envision white as like even higher than purple. It's like an enlightened state, and that's the waking. In the real world, the waking world, he is wearing white, and there's white on the bed as if it's like been rubbed off by the cloak, by the waking world. So when he's waking up, in the world of dreams, like the earthly world, he has rubbed off some of like his wakefulness onto the world in a way. Like it's even more pink, which could be a transition between red and white. So I think in terms of like art, online communities, and recognizing that we're all one, it's really starting with ourselves from a point of awareness and enlightenment. And then as we work on ourselves and slowly put ourselves out there, the world actually does change.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Matthew, it's been a long time that we've been trying to get this conversation together. It flew by.
It really did.
what a joy to have this be a part of my Saturday.
This was so fun.
This was really a lot for me. Like I don't know. I mean, we went places spiritually and ideologically and philosophically that I always love to go and that I too rarely get the opportunity to. So I really appreciate you, tickling that urge for me. Thank you. Thank you for becoming a node.
Thank you. I feel the exact same way. Thank you so much for having me. This was very enjoyable.
So where can people find you? Where can people find it's Vicebound and Capital Vice are the books that are out right now.
Yes, those are both on Amazon.com. You can also get them through the Barnes & Noble website.
Nice.
Yeah.
Do you have social that you or?
It's Matthew Crowley on Instagram, but I don't post that often. But sometimes I do. But maybe I will more in the future.
Yeah, it's worth following.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Thank you, Matthew. Have a wonderful rest of your weekend. And of course, all the links are going to be up on the Creek Mason Substack. So, when this episode gets posted, it'll be right there, easy to find.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I will see you online.